From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to this remarkable program we call Coast to Coast AM. Later on tonight, we're going live to the United Kingdom. David Icke standing by, the world of illusion. Here's what's happening. Now, I am getting this from several different sources, but apparently Ed Grimsley, the expert on night vision UFO goggles, has passed away. Nobody really knows exactly what happened. He may have died a couple days ago. Ed did have some heart-related issues. And again, I've picked this up now from two separate sources and a third responding via email that Ed Grimsley, who is an expert on ufology, and he's the one with the night vision goggles. He's the one who got me on the roof of a hotel in San Jose and said, look at these two UFOs, which I did, has passed away. We'll follow up on this story throughout the week, if that is indeed the case. And again, according to a radio reporter and a writer, Ed Grimsley has died. When Justice Scalia died 11 days ago at a West Texas ranch, he was among high-ranking members of a very exclusive fraternity for hunters called the International Order of St. Hubertus, an Austrian society that dates way back to the 1600s. After Scalia's death, the names of 35 other guests at the remote resort, along with details about Scalia's connection to the hunters, have remained largely unknown. A review of public records shows that some of the men who were with Scalia at the ranch are connected with this international order, whose members gathered at least once before the same ranch for a celebratory weekend. Now, members of the worldwide male-only society wear dark green robes emblazoned with large crosses and a motto, honoring God by honoring his creatures. Apple boss Tim Cook has hit back at the FBI over the handling of a court order to help unlock the iPhone of San Bernardino killer Syed Farouk. Cook says his company first learned of the controversial request when it was reported in the news media. He said, I don't think that's the way the railroad should be run. However, other sources say not true. Apple's legal team was the first to know. They're still squabbling over whether the FBI is going to get that phone and Apple's going to open it up. The U.S. government, acknowledging its limited success in combating Islamic extremist messaging, is recruiting high-tech companies, community organizations, educational groups to take the lead in disrupting online radicalism. And ISIS, by the way, is threatening Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg and Twitter's Jack Dorsey. Jack Dorsey, of course, the founder of Twitter, with promises that its hackers are fighting back against efforts to wipe social media platforms of accounts promoting terrorism. They have a 25-minute propaganda video showing Zuckerberg and Dorsey covered with bullet holes. Let's check in with Dr. Jerome Corsi to get his take on just what's going on the planet these days. Jerry, what do you see out there?
Well, George, a lot happening. The races for the Democratic and Republican nomination for president looks like Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton are about to be in commanding positions. I think we'll know for sure after this Super Tuesday coming up at first Tuesday in March. But clearly, Donald Trump has emerged from the Nevada caucuses winning three states in a row. So he's, you know, being attacked already. I mean, it was astounding today to see Donald Trump being attacked even by Mitt Romney, and how active the GOP establishment is to try to block Trump's candidacy. At the same time, Hillary Clinton continues to have problems with her emails, and federal judges are putting increasing pressure on her. So, I mean, it's a very interesting year, anti-establishment year, shaping up in presidential politics.
What happens if they end up with candidates who have enough delegates on the Democratic and Republican side, Jerry, but for some reason issues get them taken out? What happens?
Well, it's kind of a very interesting, you know, let's say Hillary Clinton has enough delegates to secure the Democratic nomination, and she gets indicted by the Department of Justice over her emails, which, you know, I don't know how much of a probability to put on that, but if it happens, what does the Democratic Party do? Do they have to pick another nominee? Does she run for election even under indictment?
Bizarre.
We go back in American politics to where Eugene Debs, the labor leader, did run for president from jail. He was jailed in the World War II environment for violating the Espionage Act at the time, giving a speech, I believe, in Dayton, Ohio, that was considered radical at the time. So there's nothing in U.S. law that says you can't run for president under indictment or from jail, but it's a really bizarre circumstance. And Donald Trump is bucking the entire GOP establishment. Meanwhile, there's an attempt to put this ceasefire in effect in Syria, and I'm continuing to be very skeptical it's going to take place, because I think that Assad and Russia are going to continue to push until they capture Aleppo in the northwest of Syria to try to gain commanding control against the rebels, who are really ISIS factions largely backed by the United States. And that's another bizarre feature, Joe. You know, George, we're backing, the United States is backing ISIS-affiliated
in Syria.
Groups in Syria.
Yeah, it is weird. Jerry, let's stay in touch with us, my friend. Dr. Jerry Corsi, a Minnesota man with a concealed carry license, shot and killed a would-be robber. Brooklyn Park police say in a Facebook post that early indications are the shooting stems from an attempted robbery. At some point, guns were drawn. Both men fired at each other. One had a concealed carry license, and he pulled out his gun. A young Australian boy was left bloody after being attacked by a python in his bed in an incident that his mother is describing as a real-life nightmare. The mother of a six-year-old boy, his name is Tyler, says she woke up to her son's screams at their home near New South Wales. It was like a nightmare, she says, a terrifying scream. The mother rushed into the bedroom to find Tyler bitten several times in the face by this python, around 10 feet in length. She's lucky it didn't swallow him. She told the newspaper that she found the snake wrapped around her son's stomach, was able to pull it off. No word on what the snake was doing in the room in the first place. Hey, since 2007, astronomers have detected curious, bright blasts of radio waves from the cosmos, each lasting no more than a few milliseconds. Now scientists have been able to pinpoint the source of one of the pulses, a galaxy 6 billion light years away. It's a long way. Probably came from two colliding neutron stars. But let's check in with Seth Shostak from the SETI Institute, Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. We're finding out some pretty neat things out there, Seth, aren't we?
Well, we are. Gravitational waves 1 week, and now fast radio bursts. And who's to say they may be produced by a very similar phenomena? This one was found actually almost a year ago using a big telescope. It's 64 meters. What is it? That's like
190 feet
almost, in
yeah.
diameter down in Australia. It starred in a movie, in fact, about the moon landings.
Mm-hmm.
And this telescope had found this first burst, as you say, you know, like 8 years ago. And that was kind of interesting because some people said, you know, maybe it's aliens trying to get in touch. But there were more that were found, and it was a little unclear whether they were even real. There's a microwave, actually, for heating up lunch in that telescope, and that was causing some of them. So nobody knew whether they were real or not. But turns out they're real, and for the first time, as you say, we now know where one of them is coming from, and it's coming a long way, 6 billion light years.
Seth, what did you think of that story about Apollo 10 and that they might have heard some strange music while on the far side of the moon? Some people are saying now it's just transmission interruption, but neat story, huh?
Well, yeah, I think it was a bit hyped, to be honest, because you had two you know, receivers pretty close to one another, and anybody who knows a little bit about radio knows about what's called heterodyning, and I think that's all it was. It was just having some electronics that was a little too close, and it produced strange sounds. At the time, nobody thought there was anything particularly bizarre there.
Time to do a show with you, Mr. Shostak.
Well, anytime.
All right, my friend, Seth Shostak. Hey, by the way, so we're a day past the snow full moon, that's gone, but wow, did it look great. Let's check in with Dr. Sky for his weekly astronomy update. That was a great, great full moon, Stephen.
Oh, George, absolutely spectacular. And, you know, it's really not over yet. The moon is waning right now. We call it waning gibbous. So if you're ever out there and you can be out there now, take a good look because it's quite spectacular. But, George, we keep talking about asteroids, not because necessarily we always have to, because they're in the news. And here's the latest news, in case people didn't hear. an object about 16 to 20 feet slams into the off the coast, I should say, of Brazil, about 600 miles. February 6th is the date, detected theoretically, and I say theoretically, by a military satellite in space. Nobody on the ground saw it. 13 kilotons of energy. That's pretty big. And it's interesting to note that this particular explosion was the largest since the Chelyabinsk one that we've talked about before, back in 2013. So, George, this is cool. Every day, the Earth is hit by up to 100 tons of meteoric debris, all scattered, of course. If we add it up, it would amount to that much in wheat. But this is really interesting because the next asteroid coming down the highway, we talked about it last week, 2013 TX68. Folks, put your big hats on and big helmets, but no real attack on the Earth, as they say. George, March the 7th, around 7.06 p.m. Eastern time, the 100-foot object comes close to the Earth, maybe within 19,000 miles. And here's the problem. They don't really know.
That's close.
They don't have the orbit. But, George, I'm out with the telescope right now. And this is kind of the thing to encourage the listeners to go out. If you have a telescope, look at Jupiter. I'm looking at four of the Galilean satellites, George. 414 million miles away is Jupiter. And if you look at the moon right now, as we mentioned before, waning gibbous, look along the light and dark line, the area that's the egg-shaped part where the shadow is. You're seeing the area on the moon with a large crater that the Apollo astronauts observed and noticed some outgassing, because the moon is probably not dead, called Langrenus. This is beautiful, George. In telescopes, you can see so much shadow effect, so much detail. So go out and take a good look. And, George, always check us at drsky.com and our photo and aviation site, photorecon.net.
All right, Stephen, thank you so much. Up next, John Truman Wolfe joins me. He's back with me. The coming financial crisis, a look behind the wizard's curtain. You don't want to miss this. He's next on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. John Truman Wolfe, author of America, The Litigious, Mind Games, and The Gift, also released his bestseller a few years ago, Crisis by Design. We're going to be talking about something else that is near and dear to all of us, the coming financial crisis, a look behind the wizard's curtain. John, always a pleasure having you on the show. Welcome back.
Well, back at you, George. Always a pleasure to be with you.
My gosh, and it just doesn't end out there in the financial world, John, does it?
Well, it keeps pyramiding. At some point, this bubble will break, George, both in terms of the banking situation and the overall global economy. So there's a lot to be concerned about. That's why I wrote the book and offer solutions to folks. So there's a lot going on.
I just had an expert on a couple days ago talking about the student loan crisis, and he said the housing bubble of 2007-2008 was nothing compared to what could happen with the student loans.
You know, these kids are trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars in debt. The delinquency rate is out the roof. And I don't know, you know, about you, when I went to college, you know, maybe a few kids got student loans. They were a few thousand bucks. Not anymore, George. I mean, you know, 30, 40, 50, you know, some of these kids leaving school with $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 in student loans.
Oh, it's crazy. And some of them can never pay that kind of debt off because their careers, their jobs that they got, they're not all lawyers and doctors. They're going to have a tough time paying that stuff down.
Yeah, with the unemployment situation as it is, I mean, you know, the government tries to make it look shiny. The administration tries to make it look shiny. They report these statistics that omit what was used in the original unemployment figures. They don't count the people that have stopped looking for jobs, you know, or have been out of work for a year. They're reporting unemployment in the 5% range. But when you factor in those other figures, which we used to factor into the unemployment rate, it's over 22%, George.
And where are we today, John, with unemployment, with people working, with people unemployed? I mean, where do we stand right now?
The numbers are staggering, George. There's 93 million Americans out of work. 93 million Americans out of work, 43 million Americans on food stamps. And the real unemployment rate, as I just said, is 22% plus. So this is a real situation that, you know, they basically changed how they, meaning the government, changed how they report the statistics. And so they try and make it look shiny, but it's not good at all, George. The unemployment rate and the unemployment situation in the country is dire, frankly.
It is. It is. And how do you fix something like that, John? Can you?
Well, you can if you, you know, I mean, the answer is yes, you can fix it. There are solutions, but it would take a sane government, a sane Congress to do so, and not a government that spends $1 trillion a year more than we take in. I mean, you couldn't run a business that way. You certainly couldn't run a household that way. Not even, I'm not talking about a trillion, but, you know, the government does its banking, its business backwards, George. They go, okay, good, how much are we going to spend this year?
Yeah.
Okay, $4 trillion. Good, what's the revenue? You know, $3.5 trillion. Okay, good, we'll borrow $0.5 trillion. It's actually fiscal insanity.
John Truman Wolf with us. We're talking about his work, The Coming Financial Crisis. John, for a lot of people to really get a grip on just what's going on and how it's going to affect them, let's talk a little bit about the monetary system in general. And how is money just created on this planet by the Federal Reserve in this country?
Well, you use the key word. It's just created. It's a click of a mouse. I mean, most folks don't understand that. You know, the government spends, we're using figures of, you know, several trillion dollars or $1 trillion more than it takes in. And they go to the Fed and they say, okay, good, buy some bonds. And the Fed clicks a mouse, George. It's a digital credit to the government's bank account. The Fed doesn't have any money. They don't have any money. They have nothing other than something that enters a figure in a bank account. So this is an emperor with no clothes at all, stark naked. So they buy the bonds. The treasury debt, the government pays them interest on debt on treasury bonds and treasury bills that they bought by clicking a mouse, George.
Amazing.
It's it's just bizarre.
Isn't it like Vegas creating money out of nothing?
I don't even know if Vegas does that. I mean, the Federal Reserve is beyond Vegas as far as I'm concerned. They just make it up. I mean, at least in Vegas, not that I'm validating Las Vegas, but, you know, there's a bet, you know what you're doing. You know, the house does have the odds, but you go, okay, good, I'm going to choose black, and they choose red, and, you know, they have a little bit of odds in their favor, not with the government. No such thing.
Why can't other countries do what we do, and that's merely make money? So you see these third world nations that are so poverty stricken. I've always wondered, how come they're not just printing stuff up? I guess that's because nobody wants their currency, right?
Well, actually, many of them do just print. I mean, you know, there was an infamous story here in the press some time back where Zimbabwe was just printing. I forget what the inflation rate was down there, but it was in triple digits. It was just bizarre. So they do it, but their currency, as you note, isn't accepted on world markets. So the country crashes economically, but it doesn't impact the world economic scene because it's internal.
Well, it's internal, but nobody really questions that. But what happens if the dollar, specifically for, let's say, oil, gets kicked out?
Well, the dollar has been, even though the dollar has been rising against other currencies here over the last several months, the fact of the matter is that the dollar is ceasing to become the world reserve currency. You know, Putin and the head of China made a deal a little while back for $400 billion for oil. That deal was made with rubles and RMB,
mm-hmm.
bypassing the dollar. This would have been heresy a few years ago, George.
It would have been war a few years ago.
That's right. You never did international trade without going via dollars. But the Asian countries, the BRIC nations, Brazil, Russia, China, and India and South Africa have formed their own economic union, and they're trading among themselves in their own currencies and not trading the dollar. And this is basically taking the dollar out as the world reserve currency. That's happening as we speak.
You're going to probably have two camps, one that uses the dollar, one that does not.
Yes, that's exactly what's evolving. And I think what's going to happen, and what I've written about, is that the reserve currency, meaning the currency that is being kept by central banks around the world, will be the SDR. Those initials stand for special drawing rights, and that's the currency of the International Monetary Fund, which is being injected into central banks, again, as we speak.
Let's talk about the banking system when we come back, John. Is it safe? We'll be back. George Norrie back with you with John Truman Wolf, The Coming Financial Crisis. John, this email in from Julie, I want to read it to you. It says, hi, George. I've been a Coast Insider for more than 10 years, first time contacting you. I noticed tonight's show is about the financial crisis that we're in. About 6 weeks ago, I went to the Chase Bank to deposit $1,000 in my brother's account since he was in desperate need. I've done this in prior years, but this time they wouldn't take my cash, only a check. I asked why. I was told that unless I have an account with them, that they will only take a check, as cash is paper and worthless. I stated that I can print checks on my computer, not cash, so how is it worthless? She said the government wants a paper trail. Have you heard of this? I don't know. What's going on here, John?
Well, there's a massive war on cash, George, globally. There are banks now dictated by governments in Europe that won't accept cash.
They won't accept it?
Will not accept cash. The major bank in Norway, the name of which escapes me, and I'm not sure I could pronounce it even if I remembered it, issued a press release last week calling for the elimination of cash. That theme and mantra has been pushed by a number of European countries, and as she notes, Chase, you find cash a little bit difficult at Chase. There's an effort, George, to turn money into zeros and ones. It won't be too long, and I don't have a crystal ball to call a date, but there won't be money, George. There'll be credits.
Digits, almost like bitcoins.
Yes, except that these will be traceable by the government. So, you know, they can inflate it. They can track wherever your zeros and ones go. It's why I have recommended that people take some cash, not everything, but some cash out of the bank and, at the risk of sounding old fashioned, put some in your safe at home under your mattress. And, you know, along with, we can get into other solutions.
Well, what's interesting too, John, is let's assume you've got $10,000 in the bank, in your account. You put it there. You earned it. And you go there and you want to get $9,000 out or $8,000 out. It's like pulling teeth.
Well, it's very much like pulling teeth. In some cases, you know, anything over $5,000 is questioned. The bank can file a SAP, a suspicious activity report. So this is a big deal. This is the whole world of banking is changing. There's an effort to get rid of cash, and that will, I don't see any way to stop that.
Is it because of terrorism?
Well, George, that's what they say. I don't buy it.
Neither do I.
I just don't buy it. But that's the PR line. Well, terrorists use cash. You know, we want to be. Get rid of cash so that we can track terrorists, or drug dealers use cash. You want to track, but I think that's a PR line. This benefits the banks, and it benefits the government. So that's something that's definitely coming.
Well, you know, go to a use tax instead of an income tax, and you'll be able to tax the money even if it's cash, because those drug dealers are going to buy things.
Yes, yeah. If you instituted a national sales tax, this economy would turn around
instantly,
in a heartbeat.
Yep,
in a heartbeat.
I'm all for it. It's the fair tax, and we need to do something dramatic.
Yes.
So we shall see. So let's look at where we are today, where you see the financial crisis. That's the name of your book. And what's the wizard's curtain? What's back there?
Well, two good questions. I think we're at a perilous point, George. I don't want to sound, on the one hand, don't want to sound alarmist. On the other hand,
oh, go ahead.
We've got to call it like it is. There are, George, $1.2 quadrillion worth of derivatives on this planet. Derivatives, most of the derivatives are simply bets between banks on the direction of interest rates. Bets between banks on interest rates. So, you know, B of A, just to make an example, B of A thinks a particular government's bonds are going to, the rates are going to go up. A Deutsche Bank thinks they're going to go down, and they bet, George. And then that bet becomes a security. And then people bet on that bet. And then people bet on those bets. And
jeez.
It's a pyramid, George.
Are they doing this for fun?
They're doing it for profit. They're gambling. You brought up Las Vegas here in the last
yeah. segment.
This is a massive global casino where the banks are betting, and it's $1.2 quadrillion. This bubble will break, George. This is...
What happens to those, John, who make the wrong bet?
They lose money. They definitely lose money. But notice that the interest rates are going down. The interest rates are actually going into negative territory. We are in a deflationary era environment. Now, what does somebody, you know...
What does that mean? If you put $100 in the bank, you get $90 back? Or what is that?
Yeah. Here's an example. And not too long ago, you could buy a bond. Somebody's you want to buy a bond for your IRA. So you give the government, let's say it's the state of California, you give them $50,000 because they're going to build a water plant, and they give you a bond and pay you 5% interest a year.
And how long's the bond last?
Yeah, it's so and then
10
they
years?
They pay you the principal when the bond matures. Could be 15, 20, 30 years. Now, with negative interest rates, and there are $7 trillion worth of government bonds now in negative interest rates. Now you invest the $50,000. The government does not pay you interest, and when it matures, they give you back $49,500.
Oh, that's a great deal.
That's negative interest.
My
rates.
God, why would they do that?
They're doing that in order to. Well, there are a couple of reasons. One, the banks benefit. The banks definitely benefit because now the rates are down, and they push people. The fact of the matter is that the central banks think that this is going to encourage banks to lend. So if a bank deposits money with the Fed and the Fed charges a negative interest rate, then they think the bank will turn around and instead of depositing their funds with the Fed, they'll lend it. Except that's not what's
That's not what's happening at all. They're keeping the money.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's why people are confused, because they go, well, the dollar's going to crash. The Fed's printing all this money. Yeah, the Fed is printing the money, but that's not what creates money in this country. Credit does. And if the banks aren't lending, which they're not, then 80% of money is credit. It's not, you know, printed. It's credit. And so you've got a negative interest rate scenario, you've got a deflationary scenario, which means, George, that cash is king. People say, what should I invest in? Cash becomes king as prices go down. Your money becomes worth more. It can buy more. So the reason, again, is that the Fed thinks it's going to encourage lending. Of course, these guys at the Fed, they've got the IQs of roadkill.
Well, why would an investor put $50,000 in to get back $49,000?
Well, in most cases, they wouldn't or shouldn't, except that they think that's a safe haven. They park their money with the government, and now to protect the principal, or most of the principal, they give it to the government to hold.
That's the goal, protect the principal.
That's right. So they're scared, George. They're frightened. This global financial crisis, this $1.2 quadrillion worth of derivatives, is a catastrophe waiting to happen. And as we get into in the book, what the Bank for International Settlements, which is the wizard behind the curtain, this is the central banker, central bank in Basel, Switzerland, they have pushed a policy, George, called bail-ins. A bail-in means that if a bank fails, the bank can come after depositors' money, some depositors' money, and convert it to stock. But the derivatives, of which I repeat is over $250 billion, they are secured creditors and they're protected. Depositors are unsecured creditors. When you deposit money in a bank, George, it's no longer yours. The bank owes it to you, like you laid the carpet mm-hmm. in the lobby, but you're just a liability.
If they're not FDIC insured, you're up a creek.
That's exactly correct. And so the money, this has occurred in Europe. Those that had money over the insurance limit over there, which was 100,000 euros, they had their money taken. But here's the deal. The FDIC's got $67 billion in its reserve fund. They're $9 trillion worth of deposits in this country. So if this derivative bubble breaks, the FDIC doesn't have a prayer. They've got a $500 billion loan with the U.S. Treasury, but that's a half a trillion as opposed to $9 trillion in deposits. So this is coming. This isn't, I don't mean to scare people, but you can't have this kind of fiscal insanity where these banks are betting like this Vegas casino on which way interest rates are going. Those kinds of derivatives, for the listeners, are called interest rate swaps. It's just a name.
Is it going to be worse than 2007-08?
Without question.
Oh, boy. That was bad. And that means also, though, are we going to be in a position to bail out the companies that we bailed out last time?
Well, the Dodd-Frank bill says we can no longer are there taxpayer bailouts. Only can there be bail-ins, which means when the banks fail, they come after depositors' money.
And take them. They take it.
That's right. That's correct. They convert the money to bank stock.
That's what happened in Greece.
That's what happened in Cyprus. That's correct.
People went crazy.
That's exactly right. And that scheme was basically a test pilot for what's going on here, because the European Central Bank, one of the executives at the European Central Bank, when they did that to Cyprus, said, okay, good, well, this is the pattern for the future. And then that guy got his hand spanked. But in fact, at the G20 meeting, the G20 for listeners, these are the 20 industrial nations of the planet, and the G20 are the finance ministers of those countries. And if anybody's running this show, it's the G20 as dictated by the Bank for International Settlements in Basel, Switzerland. When they last met in Brisbane, Australia, they laid out this bail-in policy as the policy to be followed for troubled banks. So here the banks are. They're now into this gambling, this insane gambling thing. And all of a sudden, here comes this policy that says, well, the derivatives are protected in the bank. The depositors are not protected, but the derivatives get the first dibs on the assets of the bank.
That's crazy.
Derivatives
aren't real hard assets, are they?
They're not, except they have some gimmick where they say that there is collateral behind the derivatives, and so they're called secured creditors.
Oh, my gosh.
Where the depositors are unsecured.
Unsecured, so they're a step above them.
That's correct.
Wow. Boy, that could be a disaster of biblical proportions, John.
I know that, George. That's why I wrote the book.
And you wrote the book. The Chinese government flew you to Beijing. What happened out there?
Well, that was an interesting trip. A friend of mine in Taiwan got the book to some people in Beijing, and then he sent me an email and went, the Chinese government would like to speak to you. I thought it was a joke, George. I said, have them fly me over business class and put me up in this hotel. I
take care of my expenses.
Yeah. Well, 24 hours later, I got an email back. They'll fly you any way you want. They'll put you up. So long story short, they flew me, business class, put me up in a nice hotel. I spent a week there. And relative to this situation, I think one of the most interesting aspects of my trip was I had dinner with the president of China Gold, which is the government-controlled gold mining consortium.
Wow.
In China.
That's big.
They're the biggest gold mining producers in the world. This guy, George, is buying up gold mines around the planet like Pac-Man.
How do you price that?
How do you
price it to buy it?
You have geologists, and they determine the value of the gold that's in the ground. I'm not a geologist.
And then they undercut you and make you an offer.
that's right. But they have a tremendous focus on gold, and the Chinese government strongly encourages people to buy gold. George, the major communist nation on planet Earth, the PRC, the People's Republic of China, has got $3.25 trillion in reserves. the Rothschilds and Rockefellers got to the, you know, Western Europe and America at the end of the 19th century, beginning of the 20th century. We're all bankrupt. But they didn't get to Beijing, not yet.
How did China get so good at what they do?
Well, in the first place, they're much more conservative financially. And while they're having, you know, they're beginning to have their own financial troubles, and we could talk about that, but they're much more conservative, number one. And number two, they had very cheap labor. You know, corporations mm-hmm. all over the planet went there and had things manufactured, and so their exports were huge, and they were and continue.
And they're great long-term thinkers.
They're long-term thinkers, and they get foreign currency. So they have $3.25 trillion in foreign currency reserves, including dollars, and they export. They export more than they import, and that's really the answer to why they're so economically strong.
I'm told that China is run by about 80 top officials, and those 80 must be so rich, John. My gosh.
News story today, George, says that Beijing now surpassed Manhattan as the most billionaires in any one city.
I believe it.
Yeah.
I believe it. I mean, but there's, what, 80 people running the entire country? That's what I hear.
Well, it's a small group. I don't know what the number is, but it's a small group.
It's a great club they got into.
This is despotism. This is tyranny. You know, and they're trying to control a pseudo free market economy.
Yeah.
But I emphasize the word pseudo.
How do they take care of their population and keep them at bay and keep them happy?
Well, there is a certain amount of economic freedom there. My youngest daughter lives there. She's been in Beijing for 12 years.
Really? She must like it.
She loves it. I mean, she's a big fan of the country.
They treat her well?
Yeah. She enrolled in a university there and sent me an email and said, "Dad, I'm home." I went, "Oh." she's a Chinese spirit. You know, she does website design and technical writing and so forth and so on.
You must miss her, though, sometimes. Huh?
Yes. Yeah.
Definitely
miss her. But anyway, that has motivated my wife and I to fly over there a few times. Besides this visit that was sponsored by the government, I've been there a few times. Beijing looks like the invasion of the body snatchers, George. There are cranes, construction cranes, all over the place.
Building. They're building cities, and there's nobody there.
That's right. There are, these what they call these ghost cities. I asked my daughter one time, how I had read some stories about it. I said, "How real is that?" She said, "Some of these places, they're just blocks of, I guess what we would call condos or apartments. They're just empty."
Empty. Getting ready for what?
Yeah. It's just a false economy.
It's strange.
They've got their problems as well. Part of that trip was I got a chance to spend some time with the Dr. Wong. This is a woman who was part of the founding of the People's Bank of China, which is the central bank there. She controlled the value of the RMB, which is the Chinese currency worldwide, very powerful position. At least the people I talk to, I mean, the politics of it aside, they're saner financially. The guys in Washington, and I've got respect for some of the folks in Congress, but as a group, individually, they're nice. They mean well. As a group, George, they're crazy because the policies that come out of Washington are fiscally irresponsible.
Irresponsible.
Yeah.
I was going to say that. Totally irresponsible. But in China, do they provide free education, free medical? Do you know?
The medical is very inexpensive. I don't think it's free. It's very, very inexpensive. The education is not free entirely because I know schools are paid for. I know my daughter, of course, she's a foreigner. So
right. If you're national, you probably have a deal.
I think it's inexpensive. I don't think it's free.
John, we're going to take phone calls next hour with you right here on Coast to Coast AM. So, folks, let your fingers do the walking.